police
to decide how to approach it. And I started by trying to do what David and I want to do, which is to kind of talk about the roughly 20 plants that we will be able to forage. Next week was 100. I read in Neil Gibbons' book, Stalking the Wild Asparagus. In his early foreword, he says, you know, I'm writing this book from a place I just moved to. And I don't know nothing about this place. But I just decided one day, and I took my notebook, and I walked only 150 yards. And he found 200 different edibles. And he said, you know, it's just like, you can't. There's no place on this planet you can't be that you can't find lots of wild edibles. Anyway, so I was saying, we could go through those 20 and we could talk about them all individually, and I realized that it would start to put me to sleep because it would become redundant. So I want to focus on just four, but then I want to go and talk about what all of the wilds have in common. So the dandelion. Nobody thinks about the dandelion. And I am telling you, this is one of the most amazing plants of all. It has a lot of vitamin A in it, a lot of beta carotene, which is B. Beta carotene is more beta carotene than carrots. And we all think of that as being the big source. They're less bitter in the spring, so if you don't want to go bitter, get them in the early spring. And it's because the sun is at a very low angle. It has nothing to do with flowering or anything like that. But bitterness is good, because the bitter dandelion will stimulate your stomach to make hydrochloric acid. So if you don't happen to have any fire cider or apple cider vinegar and you have heartburn, eat some dandelion. It will stop it immediately. And so that's why they say it's a digestive aid. And that's the reason it's a digestive aid, is because it helps with hydrochloric acid production. It also stimulates bile production. It's really interesting. So that if you eat something that requires bile, that's usually the dairy, eating dandelion with it will help to get the bile flowing. It's a mild laxative, but it's also really good for the liver, especially the flow of gallbladder. It is true that the sun will then awaken the bitterness, the naturally bitter chemicals that are in the dandelion. Beta carotene, iron and calcium. Iron and calcium more than spinach. Potassium, phosphorus, magnesium, vitamins B, C, D, and E, biotin, and inositol. Inositol is good for the brain. So get used to your dandelion. There's a lot of different ways to make it. We were just talking about roasted dandelion root for it as a coffee alternative. I like that dandelion tea. I just take the whole raw plant, and just simmer it. I don't boil it. Resist the option of boiling almost anything, even though a lot of things will say boil, because when you take a lot of things to boiling, it destroys the enzymatic activities. So there's a lot of things that are destroyed. So 195, 185, 195 will kill all things that you don't want to be drinking, but it will not kill the enzymes. Let's talk about yarrow. Yarrow. So the fresh leaves and flowers are pressed into cuts and they will stop bleeding. So that's so we want to see yarrow just because it has that quality. Gonna cut myself and I wanna just go to get my yarrow and it will help with that. But the tea, again, yarrow tea, leaves, stalks, flowers, the whole plant is an anti-inflammatory and an antiseptic. So there's one of the nice things about yarrow is it not only will stop bleeding, but it also is an antiseptic. The name of yarrow is Achillea multifolium. Achillea from Achilles. And it is true that Achilles took yarrow with him. Every single warrior had a purse of yarrow because they get gut.
I like that.
And they'd stick it right in their gut and just keep going with the battle.
How do you spell that? Yarrow.
Oh, yeah. Y-A-R-R-O-W. Yarrow. Garlic mustard. This is an amazing plant. It has the highest vitamin A of all plants. We'll talk about that in a moment. A gram per 100 milligrams of fresh. When I will talk about the amounts, don't get worried about it, but it's like if you take 100 grams of the fresh and then you measure how much chemical is in it, that's how I'm talking about. So a gram per 100 grams, it's an astounding amount of vitamin A, beta carotene, vitamin C, vitamin E, and zinc. Key thing about garlic mustard, you don't really want to grow it in your garden. You want to forage it because it's very invasive. And so you plant it and it will be the plant in your garden.
This is different than regular mustard. Garlic mustard, or is it
The whole family of mustards, but this is just
one.
It is also an antiseptic. And the leaves, the juice from the leaves are useful for cleaning wounds. So if you get a nice dirty wound, you go to your garlic mustard juice first, clean it out, and then you stick your yarrow in it to stop the bleeding. Cattails. Shoots have an incredibly high amount of what? Beta carotene. Also niacin, riboflavin, thiamine, potassium, phosphorus, and vitamin C. So David touched on this before, but stands of cattails improve the water quality. It's just that they do that. So if you are stuck in the woods, you don't know where to go for your water, you probably want to try to purify it anyway. But you can know that if you're drinking water out near the cattails, that is probably better. And the shoot jelly from a cattail is a pain reliever. All right. So I got to go now and talk a little bit more about just the basics. Everybody wants to know about the omegas. Omega-3, omega-6, omega-9. So nobody talks about omega-9 because we make that. That's the fatty acid that we are capable of making, but we cannot make omega-3 and omega-6. We have to get that from food sources. What's interesting about omega-3 and omega-6 is we need both of them. Omega-6, a primary an energy source. Omega-3 is critical for cell membranes, and therefore, the brain and the eyes, they need it. Because their cells are so, it's important that those cell membranes be perfect. Cell membranes in other parts of the body, it's not so much, but cell membranes are there so that there is a very high quantity of omega-3 in the cell membranes of the eyes and the brain. So omega-3s are thought of as the unsaturated fatty acids. Omega-6s are more of the saturated fatty acids. But don't be misled. You need omega-6. It's the ratio of the two that is critical. So the ratios that you will hear are the ratio of omega-6 to 3. And the best ratios are somewhere between 1:1 to 4:1, meaning 4:6 to 1:3. Omega-3s tend to be anti-inflammatory. Omega-6s tend to be pro-inflammatory. So here's the reason that this is a problem now. The typical Western diet, that ratio is more like between 17 and 25 to 1. Why? Because seed oils, cottonseed oil, rapeseed oil, sunflower oil, even sunflower oil, canola oil. So what are the oils that we want? Coconut, olive, and I haven't found it yet, but red palm oil is apparently one of the best. If you find some, buy it, and I'll buy it from you. So.
What about normal palm oil, too?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
I don't know.
That part I don't know. So here's the thing. If omega-6 is pro-inflammatory, omega-3 is anti-inflammatory, you need a balance somewhere 1 to 1 to 4 to 1. But if you have 17 to 21 to 1, you have a lot of pro-inflammatory and very little anti-inflammatory. And so it is believed now that the origins of almost all autoimmune processes have to do with our standard American diet. So things like bowel problems, joint problems, all these issues are likely caused by that tremendous change in the fatty acids. So where can we find good sources of omega-3? Purslane. Sow thistle. Don't know what that is. Shepherd's purse. And kale. So, purslane, spiny sow thistle, shepherd's purse, and regular sow thistle are then followed by kale. So, four of the top five sources of omega-3 are wild. So, you can grow kale in your garden and say, I'm getting a lot of omega-3, but you can go forage and get vastly higher quantities. That's all I wanted to talk about. Yeah, so the other thing about the omegas is omega-3 in plants is called alpha-linolenic acid. EPA and DHA are in fish. One of the things about it is true that it's a little harder to process ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, that omega-3, that is the plant source, and a lot easier to get it out of fish. Okay, it's fine. But you can still get plenty if you consume a lot of these sources. Beta-carotene, so vitamin A. Great antioxidant. Why do you need vitamin A? Because your eyes need a chemical called rhodopsin. That's for color vision, which is the cones, and night vision, which is the rods. If you are deficient in rhodopsin, you lose both color vision and night vision. So beta-carotene is critical to the eyes because it helps to support the rods and cones of the eye. It also is helpful for the mucous membranes, so the lining of the digestive tract, and bone growth. Top five are garlic mustard, broccoli leaves. Broccoli leaves. You're growing broccoli and you're not eating the leaves, you're missing out on the beta carotene. Kale, okay, curly dock, and turnip leaves. So two out of the five top sources are wild. That is garlic mustard at the top, and curly dock. Vitamin E, so-called alpha-tocopherol. It's a free radical scavenger. So when I was a radiation oncologist, I told people don't consume lots of vitamin C and vitamin E when you're being treated because I want to create free radicals with the radiation to damage DNA to kill the cells. Sounds bad, doesn't it? Yes, it is. So I was enabling that by telling people, don't eat vitamin C and vitamin E. Keep your vitamin C under 500 milligrams and your vitamin E under 400 IU units. I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, powerful antioxidant. It protects the lungs, the eyes, the liver, the skin, and protects most of the other organs from environmental damage. So we need high quantities of vitamin E in our diet. It also aids in maintaining the biologic integrity of the vitamin A. So if you're going to take beta carotene, you also got to take alpha tocopherol. Purslane, top, followed by lowly dandelion. Turnip greens, collard greens, and spinach. So two of the five sources of vitamin E are also wild. In fact, the two top, purslane and dandelion. Vitamin C, or citrate, another free radical scavenger. It is also an electron donor. So we use a lot of electrons when we're generating, use up a lot of electrons when we're generating energy. And so we need electrons. And so we want to have a good source of citrate. And in fact, when we're damaged, we need more energy to repair the injury. So this is one of the reasons why they say take huge quantities of vitamin C when you're sick. Because you go through it like that. It's one of the ones that you use up really fast because you need citrate for almost everything. Not only is it an antioxidant, it supports vitamin E, right? So you can see A, C, and E, you need all three. Collagen formation requires vitamin C. So your skin, your tendons, your ligaments, your bones, your teeth. Amino acid metabolism, pretty critical. Hormone synthesis and cholesterol synthesis. Remember, cholesterol is good. We're back to cholesterol is good. Cholesterol is not bad. Anybody who's taking an anti-cholesterol medication, see me after? Because I got to get you off it. top one, garlic mustard again. I'm loving garlic mustard. I want to know where that is because I want that. I want huge patches of that. Garlic mustard, tops the list. Wintercress buds and leaves. Green amaranth. Again, so top four sources of vitamin C are also wild. Riboflavin, or vitamin B2. So riboflavin. So it's an interesting story. You know how you look at those, you buy bread at the store, don't buy bread at the store, get Bill's bread. This is bread. Yeah. That's poison. But it was created as a poison back in the 20s and 30s when they started grinding and grinding and grinding the flour down into nothing. And in doing so, that mechanical grinding destroyed niacin, riboflavin, folate, and so when they came up with these beautiful, cushy breads, they were wonderful, easy to slice, wonderful. People started dropping dead of heart attacks. Because without without riboflavin, you can't support, there's some critical functions that are escaping me right now. Ah, mitochondrial energy. Anyway, the riboflavin was deficient in these breads. People were eating the breads and they were getting serious riboflavin deficiencies. And there are a couple of enzymatic reactions that the heart relies on, which are riboflavin is required for. So what did they do? And niacin deficiency was another one, and then folate deficiency. Folate deficiency was noticed in pregnant women that are delivering children that had neural tube defects. It's a folate deficiency. Anyway, these three serious problems emerged in the next 5 or 6 years after these breads were brought out, and they determined that it was the flour. So instead of going back to grinding the old way and getting people back to the old way of making bread, they just added these back in. So when you see enriched flour, that's what's enriched with. The stuff they destroy to create. It's pretty slow. Ah, folate. Or folate. Critical for amino acid metabolism, DNA synthesis, neurotransmitter synthesis. This is one of the reasons why you developed neural tube defects. So folate deficiencies are bad. It's a common nutrient deficiency in grains. It's now why they're fortifying them. The top sources are not grains, but in fact, cultivated leafy sources. So turnip greens and spinach top the list, followed by mustard and collard greens. So I don't need, if I'm pregnant, I don't need to be supplementing with folate. I need to be eating turnip greens. Calcium. Okay, bone development and maintenance. Muscle contraction. This is, so bone development is just because our bones are mostly calcium. But the reason that they're mostly calcium is because we need calcium for our muscles to work. Nerve transmission and blood clotting. So calcium is one of these critical things. Wild carrots, Queen Anne's lace. It's the same family as poisonous hemlock, so you need people like David to point out. So a good foraging companion is really necessary. I know. Green amaranth, wild spinach, shepherd's purse, and garlic mustard. So one of the things about leafy vegetable sources of calcium is that there can be a high oxalate content. Now, most of us can handle oxalates, but those who can't, people get kidney stones, usually they're calcium oxalate, right? So kidney stones are easily prevented by drinking lots of lemon water, just drinking a lot of water, because it keeps the oxalate in solution. Iron, okay, primary hemoglobin for oxygen transport, but also some critical enzymatic activities. We don't need much because we're very efficient at recycling. Topping the list there is something called wood sorrel, green amaranth, shepherd's purse, and garlic mustard. So I want to know where shepherd's purse is and garlic mustard and dandelion. Yes.
When you say dandelion, which part of the dandelion is good for what? Because you didn't quite go into that.
All of it is good for all of it. So there isn't any one part that's really better. What I would say is, if you're experimenting with dandelion, right, you want to realize that, except for potentially the very early spring growth, it's going to be bitter. So My taste has changed dramatically over the last 3 years as I have changed my diet. Now I like the taste of dandelion. But it's an acquired taste, just like everything else. So I drink a lot of dandelion tea. I just take the whole dandelion, just root and all. I knock off the dirt and I do clean it a little bit underwater, but not much, because I like having some dirt in there. Mm-hmm. And then I did big pot, fill it about half full, and then keep adding distilled water until I get to just covered. Then I just simmer it for about, I watch it. As soon as I see it start to boil, so that's 195 or 200, I turn it right down, simmer for about 15 minutes and stop. And then I just let it sit and cool completely. Cool all the way down to room temperature. And then I just take a, whatever you have, colander or anything like that, and just run through the filter just to get the big stuff through it. And it's great. I drink it with honey. My wife drinks it straight. I don't know how she does it. Brian?
Does it help to chop it up into smaller pieces before simmering?
I suppose. I'm just lazy, I guess.
efficient.
So if you make like a tea or something out of it, how long do you have to let it like steep for? A couple days?
No, I just, like I was saying, so I bring it to just below a boil, simmer it for about 15, 20 minutes, turn the heat off, and let it just cool all the way down to room temperature.
Oh, so you have to add some heat to it. You can't just let it soak.
I suppose you could. I've never even thought about that. That's probably that's a great idea.
And then it would be raw tea.
I'm liking that. I'm liking it. We're trying. We're trying.
Hey, Glenn. So if Charlie let it soak for a couple of days, like in the refrigerator, if you get the flavor out of it, can you assume you're also getting the nutrients?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think you're going to get the nutrients anyway. Absolutely.
Or sun tea.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, if I need iron, so I actually am iron deficient. Iron from plants is poorly absorbed. Almost all of us are not iron deficient because we are so efficient at recycling. But women who are menstruating and somebody who's had a big cut, lost a lot of blood. In theory, those are two classes that could get iron deficient. And so there, if you need to replenish iron, you got to get it from a meat source.
Of course. I like to fry eggs in an iron skillet. Do I get iron now?
Yes, you do. Absolutely.
Is it the absorbable kind?
And if you fried eggs in your aluminum skillet, you get your nice aluminum. It's going to be wonderful.
Aluminum, which you don't want.
Shelley.
Is the aluminum... the iron from the cast iron pan, I've heard that it, I hear different things, but one was that it is not absorbable. The kind that we need, I should say.
Yeah, I don't know that.
And are there different irons, the ones we need and the ones we don't?
No, there's only one type of iron. It's how they are, what is true is it's how they are chelated, that some are more easily released than others. And plant sources are a little, the chelates are a little more binding so that they're harder to pull off.
Another quick.
Yes.
Isn't it true that men have to be careful not to get too much iron?
Yeah, but as I say, it's not, even if you're eating lots of garlic, mustard, and dandelion, you won't. Because the absorption is so little that it's not going to be a problem.
Another iron question. When we were living in the suburbs of Yarmouth, we had so much iron in the water, I became toxic. But now we're in the country on a well, we still have tons of iron in the water. So.
And you're not toxic?
Oh, I'm toxic. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I was gonna say it was Yarmouth.
That's why I was close to the water. But yeah. So some people say the only way to get rid of the iron is to give blood. Your body will not rid it.
So zeolite.
Yeah.
The only way to get rid of heavy metals is either through blood or purge it through your kidneys.
Zeolite's controversial too.
Right. No. So
I've gotten lead poisoning, but well, not because I was indoor shooting a lot last year. My lead level went way up.
Yeah.
And you don't need to really take a test. You just you'll be exhausted for no reason. You have a lot of brain fog. Just have to make sure you're drinking water.
Yeah, I just look for it. It's not. I have a different. Heavy metal poisoning can be stopped with it's selenium, boron, copper. I think those are the three that you want to be sure you're getting, and they will pull heavy metals out of the system. I can't remember the other one. There's one other. Zinc. That's it. Zinc. So selenium, boron, copper, and zinc. So those are good metals, and they will compete with heavy metals.
Does B12 catalyze iron uptake?
Does it?
I think it does.
Okay.
I'm wondering if we know.
I have to look.
Oh, okay.
So, zinc. This is another one of those amazing things. So, I'm starting to lose my mind on whether their viruses exist or not, but it doesn't really matter. The point is that whatever it is that gets bad into the cell, one of the things about zinc is you get the zinc in the cell and it counteracts what's bad in the cell. So you want to call it a virus, you want to call it whatever. So you want to be able to get zinc into the cell. So first you have to have a source of zinc. But then you also need something to transport it in. And there are a lot of plants that do that. And there's an extract called quercetin that's in a lot of different plants that is a zinc ionophore. So if you're going to take zinc, you want to be sure that you also want to take quercetin as a cofactor. So zinc is a cofactor in multiple enzymatic reactions. Has the direct intracellular virus killing, which is enhanced by quercetin. Highest source of zinc? Garlic mustard. Yeah. Followed by amaranth, sow thistle, wild spinach, and shepherd's purse. And chickweed. So top six leafy sources of zinc are what?
Garlic mustard.
Dandelion.
We love, you know, if that's purslane, dandelion, garlic mustard, that's all you need. Those three, you want to know those three in your forage. Copper, cofactor for multiple enzymatic reactions. Hemoglobin synthesis requires copper. So if you have a red blood cell, it's great. But if you are deficient in copper, you will eventually become deficient in hemoglobin. It also aids in synthesis of myelin. Myelin is that covering around nerves. So in order to have adequate electrical connection, you need an insulator. So your myelin sheath is critical. So copper is critical. Turnip greens, sow thistle, kale, wild spinach. So two of the four top, two of the top four are wild. Manganese. Protein synthesis and degradation. So we need to make proteins, we need to be able to recycle them. So manganese is part of both of those. Collagen formation, carbohydrate metabolism, it's an antioxidant. Sow thistle tops the list. 1.2 grams per 100 grams of stuff. It's like amazing. Wild spinach, garlic mustard, regular spinach, and shepherd's purse. Four out of five are top wild. And then selenium. This is an interesting one. We don't have a lot of selenium in our soil. So when you are out foraging for something, I'm telling you it's got selenium in it, it's probably deficient here in Maine. It's a really strong antioxidant and is important for heavy metal detoxification along with boron and copper and zinc. But the amount of selenium in the soil determines the amount of selenium that's going to be in the plant. The highest source is broccoli leaves. Didn't know that. So I'll eat a lot of them and I might get my selenium dose. Collards, turnip greens, spinach, purslane, and lowly dandelion. Alright, that's about all I have. Questions? So that was a ton of information. Problem. It blows you away the first time.
Quick question.
Yes.
Did I ever hear you mention watercress?
I didn't mention watercress.
Okay, I've heard that.
Tell me about it.
Well, I don't know much on this subject at all, but I read that watercress is one of the richest vitamin and mineral plants. And they now sell it at Hannaford, produced by quote unquote local farmers, okay? And it comes in a little paper sleeve with the root ball still attached.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
One of my very favorites is not only nutritious but delicious. It's very, very good plant. It's cooked kind of like spinach, but raw. It tastes like horseradish.
Mm-hmm.
And we ate bales of it down in southern Maine. And it's hard to find. We found it's hard to find up here. We have found a couple places, and it's really, really, really easy to transplant. You need a wet area. But you can almost throw the leaves in a wet area and get it to grow. So, yeah, it's a good one. But I have a couple questions for you, Glenn, if I could. can get these nutrients. You mentioned simmering the dandelion. Can we simmer all these nutrients in that same way?
Yes. Again, I think that it really is the temperature of the water that determines some enzymes are killed at even a lower temperature than that, but the temperature of the water is going to determine. So the trouble with boiling it is still going to get a lot of things that are heat tolerant, but there are a lot of things that are not heat tolerant. I'm get shocked by that.
So what about temperatures? Is that a good way to get the nutrients out? Like I'm thinking
on yeah,
like things like omega 3s.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Saltus will help a lot.
Yes, it did.
I love the way you did this. This was incredible. Instead of going over
almost
40 plants and telling us what's in them, the way you organized that was excellent. But Saltus was a plant I don't really care to eat personally. I don't like the flavor. It's really bitter. You said bitters are good. You can't eat it. But I was wondering about the tincture. And Saltus was spiny. It's really small spines. You cut only on the edge. You cut them off easily. So it's not difficult to eat. But,
right.
But if I can get the nutrients out of a plant with a tincture or simmering.
I would say that's correct.
Okay.
I mean, I think that there's almost no way you could just dry it, tincture it.
Yeah. Well, we have another expert here, actually.
Oh, no. I just wanted to recommend tincture again in apple cider vinegar.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So the oxy now. Is that right?
You can do it without the honey. Yeah, you can just make it with the vinegar. But
use
the
vinegar.
Herbal vinegars are so packed.
Okay.
It really gets everything out.
Just a tincture with vinegar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah.
Another question. I know that it's often recommended that when you're exercising or exerting a lot of physical energy to take electrolytes, but so, what do you think about that? Is that a good idea, or is it not? Is water fine?
Yeah. So it has to do with sweat, right? So if I am sweating profusely, I forgot to mention yarrow is really good. It's a fever inducer. So it helps sweat out fever. So yarrow will get you, you're hot, but you're not feverish yet. You're not sweating yet. Take yarrow, a tea of yarrow, and it will get you to sweat out the fever, cool your body down. What you're asking is a little bit different. So if you're sweating profusely for a long period of time, in theory, you could become electrolyte deficient. But if you're just exercising regularly, body is pretty amazing.
And what about the something else earlier?
So vitamin C or citrate is an electron donor, right? So a lot of the enzymatic reactions require a source of electrons to happen. So there's millions of different things that are electron donors in the body, but citrate just happens to be one of them. Different from ions, right? So negative ions in general are necessary to, our body should maintain its negative ion state. And my shoes, I'm trying to train my feet again to walk out into my garden, right? Because if you can spend as little as 20 minutes a day barefoot on the earth, you'll be good. You'll be much better.
Does the cost benefit scenario of going past 20 minutes kind of deplete very quickly?
No.
Okay.
No. But that, in the winter I pet my dog. Mm-hmm. Dog runs back outside, comes back in 20 minutes later, full of irons again. Mm-hmm. Pet him again. Where did you learn that? Wow. So why are you wearing
shoes?
Winter
time too.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Do your feet don't get cold? Yeah.
They never wear shoes. Winter time and summertime.
Oh, very good.
I noticed that. I noticed.
Yes.
From dealing with minerals a lot, I heard a lot that copper is very deadly, and so is zinc, because of the sulfide. Is that because it has different elements in it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's like kind of two kinds.
Correct. So you're right. This gets into if you are going to supplement and you go and buy a bottle of copper, you got to be very careful there, or buy a bottle of zinc, you got to be careful there. Mm-hmm. You want to know your source. But in the wild, I'm not sure that's going to be as much of a problem. Good question.
Well, also, is it because it has less, you know, less copper content?
I don't think it's the copper content. I think it's what it's bound to, what it's chelated to.
Okay, because I know, like, people have told me stories that people, like, fluorite is a sulfide as well. They were like, they would split it to, like, make it a certain cube shape to sell it more. And he just, like, lick it to see if it was, like, good. And he had to get throat surgery because of it. So I don't think it was, so I'm just...
Yeah, it's not good.
Taking straight copper.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Can you just pick a dandelion and
eat it? Uh-huh. So I have a friend down the street. He has a throat cancer. And he will not get treated with conventional treatment. So what he did was he went back to his routine of eating raw dandelion, and a lot of it, just out of his own garden, his own yard. And within several weeks, the lymph node in his neck went away. And it's just dandelion. And there is a story on the internet of an old farmer who just took dandelion roots, dried them, chopped them up. He used a hammer on a skillet. That was his chopping. He said, you have to be careful because they go all over the place. Anyway, 1/4 teaspoon of dandelion per day, and in 3 months, his metastatic prostate cancer was under control. Metastatic prostate cancer was under control. So I'm not, who knows? But dandelion root, I mean, I am so into dandelion. I can't tell you. Oh my God! You have. This is like, wow, wonderful.
Well, I guess we better stop.
Dandelions are an amazing plant because the biodiversity that you see, or the amount of it in our lawn and in the fields, is remarkable. That's just impressive. The bitterness is a deterrent to eating it. And I think I know the answer to my question, but my maternal grandfather used to make dandelion wine.
Mm.
And I wonder if...
Hey!
If that would be a better way to consume dandelion.
What do you think?
Well,
maybe, huh?
I recommend vinegar.
Yeah.
With like some balsamic and garlic.
Is it?
Yeah.
The stem and everything? Or the leaves?
Yeah, and we make dandelion fritters at our house.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, which is the flowers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, chickpea flour.
So good.
That's it. Just like in some...
What do you do with the flour?
Fry them.
You have to make a batter just with water, and then you just dip them and fry them.
A batter with water.
With water or chickpea flour. Or you can use any flour you
and
want.
Chickpea.
Chickpea.
Chickpea
flour.
Oh,
chickpea flour.
But yeah, you can use
any flour.
Burdock root.
Ooh, I like burdock. Who said that? I didn't look up burdock root much. Tell me about it.
I don't know that much about it. Do you know that? Burdock root's supposed to be kind of miraculous, I think.
Yeah, I eat it.
It's awfully good.
Did you talk about nettles?
Didn't talk about nettle. No.
Just eat nettles.
Nettles all of them. Yeah.
For everything.
Mm-hmm.
Don't eat them raw, though.
Why? Because it'll hurt?
Or at least not stinging, yes. Guy. Oh, yeah. It hurts a lot. And I don't think you'd be able to eat anything for about a month afterwards.
Right out of the garden.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt. It doesn't, it just melts right in your mouth.
Yeah,
actually. Can you, just go over, did you want to add to that?
No, I was just saying that I knew somebody who did eat the fresh nettles raw.
Mm.
You really liked them. Really funny. I never tried it, and I never wanted to.
Can you just go over the omega 3 and 6? I lost you. You were talking about a 1-to-1.
So, right. Omega 6 has been vilified in the press as something that's bad. It is not bad. We
Why
need.
Do that?
What's that?
Why
do
they do that?
Because they want us to die.
It's the ratio that can be
right.
Very
good. So omega-3s are considered sort of good fatty acids, and omega-6 therefore has to be a bad fatty acid because you need something bad to counteract something that's good. What is the problem has been the ratio of 6 to 3 has changed. So prior to about 1960, our diet was like most diets, and the ratio is about between 1-to-1 to 4-to-1, 6. But now it's between 17 and 21 to 1. And the trouble with 6 is that it's pro-inflammatory. God made us perfectly. We need inflammatory processes, and we need anti-inflammatory processes. But we can't tilt it so much that you stretch out it strains the ability of the system to function. So if there's not enough 3 around to counteract the 6, you get an excess of pro-inflammatory, hence autoimmunity. So the a useful diet will bring that down. And it's really simple. You just stop eating everything that's in Hannaford. Because everything in Hannaford has about the second or third ingredients can be soybean oil, canola oil, rapeseed oil, cottonseed oil. So if you look at the ingredient and that's the second or third ingredient, that's by weight. So that means that you're consuming a lot of that. And so that you're getting your daily dose of 6 in about 4 seconds with about 2 chips. And you don't have enough 3 to counteract that.
And you said that the good oils were olive oil
and palm and coconut.
And red palm.
Red palm, if you can find it. Okay. I mean, I'm sure there are others. Those are ones that are readily available. It's easy to get.
What do you think about high heat avocado oil?
Yeah, I think avocado oil is okay too. It's all packaging. So there's a lot of olive oils out there that are not.
Right.
You put them in the refrigerator and they solidify, it's olive oil.
Right.
Put them in the refrigerator and they don't, it's been cut for something else.
There's these plants that we eat that are like shaped like little hearts and they're like sour. Mm. But they're edible because we looked it up.
With
sorrel?
Yeah, they found the leaves being heart-shaped. Yeah, that's sorrel. And you mentioned sorrel.
I did?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Really? You can identify it? Cool. So
I can too.
Of course you can. It's erased right. I can't. And I'm 20 times older than you. Sorrel. Good.
Iron.
You're right. Wood sorrel.
Yeah.
Highest source of iron. 1 mg/100 grams.
Glenn.
Yes.
I was reading the ingredients of something at the store recently, and I was wondering how, on the scale of badness, how bad xanthan gum is.
So,
I've never heard of it, really.
Right. And that's the thing. If you can't identify the ingredients, salt, flour, no. Xanthan gum, no. Powdered sorbet 80, no.
Well, what is it, though?
I don't know. It's poison. So, you know, there are, what? Europe allows 400 ingredients in their foods. We allow 10,000 ingredients in our foods, right? And so we've got a lot of things in our foods that are undigestible. The body is foreign to the body, doesn't understand it. So it stores it, or it creates autoimmune phenomena, whatever. Yes?
Like, sometimes I come across these gums that are like mint. I'm like, that doesn't sound like mint. Because there's, like, weird ingredients in it and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not mint. Mint out in the garden? That's mint. Mint, like, mint chewy? No.
Yeah, sorbitol. Like, you know,
and where's the ingredient mint in the list? It doesn't exist. There's no mint in spearmint gum.
It'll say artificial mint flavor.
Uh-huh. Oh,
natural flavors.
Be careful of natural. Natural ingredients are unnatural to the body.
It says natural, though.
Who was it? Sandy Koufax? Was he the natural? I forget.
I need a little bit more than it's not good.
Yeah, it's not good.
Can you expand on that just a little bit?
Which? For natural flavors? Yeah.
Well, so, not natural about the word natural.
Yeah. That word has been stolen. It used to mean what you'd think it would be, of nature. But no, it's a chemical that is similar to that which is in nature. But the biosimilarity is, there may be a structural biosimilarity, but there are going to be some serious problems with the chemical itself. That is, whatever side chains and things like that that just hang on to it that are not found in the wild.
The natural flavor thing also is a way of sneaking MSG into a product. I mean, they call it autolyzed yeast extract or isolated protein, soy protein, but it's MSG.
Yeah.
MSG is an excitotoxin.
What is MSG spelled?
Monosodium glutamate. It's a
flavor enhancer. It's the enzyme in your the part of your brain that's a flavor receptor. Salt does it, but they concentrated that into MSG, so your brain responds to it much more intensely. But the side effect of it is, you know, extreme dehydration.
And you have to buy more.
Well, you just, it makes everything taste really good.
Okay.
It occurs naturally in mushrooms and I think in soy products like tamari sauce or soy sauce, but
but everything in moderation. I mean, it's not.
Also, natural flavorings can also be actually human body.
What?
That's pretty natural.
And they're also flavor. They're also flavor enhancers. There's a company in San Diego called Seminex or something like that, and they produce that flavor enhancer.
Hmm.
And that's what it is. Source from them. So no Christian or any person would want to be, I just wanted to stay out of the stores. You said it yourself. We just need to be eating whole food.
Yeah.
And there's almost no exception to that anymore.
The water
in the world, we live in. Yes, you're right. The water grass passes. Not much else.
So unless it was raised and sprayed.
Yeah, that's...
Right, yeah. If it's going to Hannaford, it's likely been enhanced to have a longer shelf life.
Yes, which means perfect.
Farmers markets. And then you got to know your farmer as well. It's not that easy.
Good point.
Grow your own food. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
And you Debbie Downer here.
No. We are a good company.
All right. Thank you all.